We're open for questions. I'm sure we have a lot of them. Will the people with the microphones ready to hand out? Just Joel, okay? So start over here on the right with this young lady in the third or fourth row.
Hi. Is that too loud? Okay, thank you. We heard referred to during the other sessions a couple of times issues of sleep disturbance and also mentioning of different fillers. And I was hoping, and different protocols in terms of how, what number of milligrams someone should start on for different reasons. And I know that you as pharmacists have certain things that you recommend that you've seen. So I'm specifically interested in, and I had a conversation with someone at one of your pharmacies just yesterday about starting someone who had sleep disturbances on a lower dosage at first and then ratcheting up to a higher dosage. And I had a conversation about fillers. So I was hoping that you could each address, or if not, there's not enough time, maybe just Dr. Skip, address those two issues, fillers and also the lower to higher dose protocol to avoid the sleep disturbances. Thank you.
I disagree with the comments about calcium fillers here.
Need to hold it closer.
Closer.
I disagree with the comments about calcium fillers. Our protocol that we developed with one of the neurologists in Southern Florida to avoid the issue of the side effects is 1.5 times 30, 3 times 30, and then 4.5 if you can do it and thereafter. And we haven't, well, I shouldn't say that. Let's rephrase. To date, I don't know of any side effects that have happened according to that protocol, but that will probably be a study that my students do this summer.
Do you mean
1.5 milligram? 1.5 milligrams QHS for 30 days, then 3, and then 4.5. An anecdotal statement, I took 1.5 a couple days and I had vivid dreams, but no stiffness.
I would start with 20 milligrams dose and see how the patient would respond.
Into the microphone.
Okay. I would start with 20 milligrams dose and see how the patient will respond. And based on that, we can adjust the dose. It's very, very hard to determine if you're going to develop a side effect or not in any medication. People respond to medication differently. I might develop insomnia, you might not. But also we have to take into consideration the weight of the patient. If the patient is not is really very lightweight, we might go under 3 milligrams. But any normal person, I would start with 3 milligrams. And if there is no improvement, they will go to 4.5. As far as the filler, we did very well with calcium carbonate in Europe. We got a tremendous result. Our friend in the United States here, our other compounding pharmacist, disagree with that, but we got a very good result. Dr. Bahari liked the lactose more. He told us to do only lactose, and he doesn't want anything else but lactose, because all his research are done on lactose, and he doesn't want to change, and I do not blame him, because we have to be consistent. When we do a study, we have to be consistent, and that's our only chance to get it approved by the FDA. Everybody here is under the impression it's not going to be approved by the FDA. I disagree. If we do it the right way, we follow all the protocols, the laws, we speak to the right people, we can get it approved. And I think we're going to start with HIV. After the Mali study, I think we're going to go to a doctor's in here and start pushing it. And that is really our objective, to get it approved by the FDA. And have a drug company take over and do the research. They can do a much better job than we can do. They have the resources, and that really can tell us what exactly is going on. Other than that, it's very, with our resources, it's very, very hard to determine if the medication, what is the medication doing exactly. All the information that we can get, it's not really good enough. We have a drug company has to take it over. Down the line. But we have to convince them first, and I think we will.
I won't even discuss the fillers because this goes round and round, and my comment last night was it's an important issue, but it's mostly irrelevant. But With the side effect of somebody having sleep disorders, first of all, you have to determine what's causing the sleep disorder in the first place. It may have nothing to do with endorphin production. The only way, like Victor had mentioned, the only way to find out is to find out. Secondly, we mentioned the side effect or the activity of naltrexone in relation to opioids. And we've had specific experience that the small dose of naltrexone does not diminish the anti-opioid effect. A 3 milligram will throw a person into drastic reaction to opioids, sure, just like a 2 milligram will. So just because we're taking small doses of naltrexone at bedtime doesn't mean it's a small potential for reaction. If someone's using an opioid and they've been using it for a long period of time, they will have a dramatic reaction and a withdrawal reaction from even the smallest doses. So this is a potent thing we're dealing with here. It's not just a salve that's kind of we're tampering with the most important part of our immune systems.
And thank you. Before we forget, Skip pointed out that there was only one better drug, and he showed it to you. He said it's Novantrone, but what he didn't go on to tell you, and if he would take the mobile mic now, would you pass him the mic, please? Why don't you also add what happens to people who take Novantrone?
Let's talk about side effects. I think you all know. We don't have to say any more.
No, they don't know. Some of them don't know. You must tell them.
Where can you start? Blood dyscrasies, neuropathies.
This is a serious drug that's used for cancers.
Yeah, this is a real serious drug. You put me on the spot.
Well, let it be said that you don't want to take Novantrone.
Actually, Novantrone has a mixed agonist-antagonist activity, and it actually does have the side effects we're talking about getting from a narcotic withdrawal. It's a very odd-acting drug, but it has both actions in it. And it does have variable actions depending on population. Some people have dramatic opioid-type reactions. Some people have just the opposite. It works, and it has a very nice profile, but the side effect profile is really something we can't get a handle on.
Scary, yeah. There are questions now.
Where do you want to go?
The next row. Next row, I see, yes, that row.
Hello, and thank all of you for coming here. And back to the question about the evil empire. I loved your nice, even-handed mention of that. But we all need to find out how can the drug companies make a profit off of this drug, because that's what's going to move it forward. Pain Therapeutics is doing a clinical trial with LDN for irritable bowel syndrome. They gave it a funny code name like PT-19, which is an airplane. But we need to know, can they change a molecule on this and then make some money on it so it can become more widely dispersed around the world to help more people and to get it out there? Can anybody address that?
Victor, go ahead.
You see, every drug company is out there to make money. The only reason this medication hasn't been approved yet, because we could not convince them that they can make money out of it. Now, the thing is, they can make money out of it. Let me give you some background about that. We have a medication called Wellbutrin SR-150. That medication is used for depression. While they were using it, they found out that that medication can help people quit smoking. It killed the smoking desire. Another company took that medication under a different name called Zyban 150. And they have the patent. They're making it right now. I mean, it's made. And it's sold in the United States, and I think they're making profits. One is a better example than this is a medication called Proscar. It's used for prostate enlargement. While they were doing it, they found some hair growing. So it's used now for baldness. So, and it has been approved. And there are a different name called Propecia 1 milligram. It's exactly the same medication made by the same company, and it's called Propecia 1 milligram. It's doing fantastic. They're making a lot of money on it. Now, if we did not get this medication approved yet because we are doing something wrong, I don't know what we're doing wrong, but we are doing something wrong. If we get all the data together, we get somebody to finance it, and we take it to the right people, I think we can get this medication approved. And I think we should do that, and that's for the benefit of everybody. We might be out of compounding naltrexone business, but the world can move on without that.
Sammy Joe, did you have a specific question about pain therapeutics use of...
Just that that's an example of somebody that is taking the drug and renaming it, and I don't know if that means they can then get a patent on it or if they've changed a molecule.
Yes, let me explain. What they've done is to take, and how they came upon it, I don't know, but they've taken 0.5 milligram. That's what they take, 0.5 milligram, and they took a patent out for pain. That's something that Bernie Bihari never did. Bernie tried to do use patents on all clinical uses, but pain therapeutics is fastened onto that 0.5 milligram. And so they've got that, and they're getting results. They won't say what their phase 3 trial showed, but they're getting results even with the 0.5 milligram. So this is quite wonderful stuff.
David, can I make one comment on the pricing here?
Please.
If, let's just assume that we are that somebody is successful in getting a large manufacturer to take this product on, they can make money at it. But it's going to cost a whole lot more than what we're paying right now. I mean, you've got people customizing the product and selling it for $20, $25 a month supply. I will guarantee that if this becomes a patented product on the market, you're talking hundreds of dollars a month. And I don't care what anybody says about this is how you make money on it. You take the product, you make it as cheaply as possible, and you sell it for as much as you can. And knowing the tradition of pharmaceutical pricing in the United States, this product will not be a $23 item. Furthermore, compounders will be out of the market. We won't be able to make it for you. So even though we're capable of doing it and we're capable of selling it for $20 or $25, when that commercial product hits the market, you will no longer be able to get it from a compounder. And if you want it and if it's working, you'll pay for it.
I'd like to make a comment here about
yes.
that.
That's
the
good.
Way drug companies, and I was part of the evil empire, the way drug companies do their pricing, they take all of their cost, okay, they divide it by 17. That's what they've got to make on a drug every year. So it has very little to do with how much it costs in terms of the drug itself. Very, very little do. It's a multiple of that number. So if you're getting it for $20 to $25 now a month, you will be getting it for $100 to $150 a month. Now, if you look at the current marketplace in MS drugs, okay, you're looking at least a multiple of 100, if not higher. Okay, so this is a two-edged sword here. Yeah, you can get it approved by, well, I disagree that you can get it approved by the FDA. Okay, I don't think that will ever happen. That's my gut bottom line. Skip the pharmacist. This is the truth. Thing, okay? I don't believe that's ever going to happen. I think our position should be, we don't care whether it's approved by the FDA. We can get this drug. This drug is working, okay? And the heck with them. If physicians don't want to write, P.S., get another physician. Okay? P.S., get another physician. If they don't want to buy into it, they don't want to believe it, fine. That's okay. There are enough physicians out there who are writing. That's really the whole issue. And your co-pays are always going to be over $20, so...
Excuse me, if I can make a comment? Dr. Glass, 1 second. If the medicine is approved by the FDA, the benefits out the risk. It's very important for the FDA to approve it because they can do a statistic in a professional way. They can do all the research in a professional way. The insurance company will cover the medication. Even at Irmac, we forced some insurance company to cover the medication, and they did. Like Express Script, we had a big argument with them, but at the end, we convinced them to cover the LDN. But if the medication gets approved by the FDA, the research that it will be done on it will be tremendously more important than if we do it ourselves, because we're not experienced enough to do a research. We need a professional company to do the research.
Thank you, Victor. A question from the back from Norman Brown.
Yes, I wonder if any of you have any experience with the drug being taken in the morning instead of the evening. You have any anecdotal reports whatsoever? Dr. Mir's study was done giving the drug in the morning and not in the evening. Do any of you have any experience with that?
Yes, there's been about two people that I've talked to that did both. They took an evening dose and they took a daytime dose because they felt that they felt better when they woke up in the morning and started to wear off by around noon. They'd pop a 1 or 1.5 milligram. That only continued for about a year, and I haven't heard from those folks. But there was some indication that, you know, there's a need to hit this endorphin, this immune system, more often than once a day. And again, that's kind of why I was mentioning the pepper thing. That was kind of anecdotal and kind of off the topic. But somehow when you buzz the immune system, you get some kind of benefits out of it. So I don't think there's anything that we should automatically say it's always bedtime. We're all individuals and we act differently.
Until the studies are done.